All right, chat. Today we're going to talk about how to have a fluid conversation. So I don't know if y'all have ever been in this scenario where you're sitting there, you're talking to someone and everything is really easy. You're enjoying yourself. Conversation is free flowing. And then someone else shows up. And either this person is a stranger or I feel intimidated by them or they're a cute girl. And then I want to continue having a free-flowing, fun conversation where I'm laughing and I'm being my best self. But instead, what I do is lock up completely. And in a day and age where we have a loneliness crisis, we have a dating and mating crisis, I think understanding very simple but crucial elements of human interaction has become incredibly important. So we're going to start by understanding the science behind it, because once we understand what goes on in your brain, in your nervous system, then we will have a roadmap for how to fix it. So the first thing is that when we are having a normal conversation, we are in a relaxed state, which means that our parasympathetic nervous system, which is the part of the mode of our nervous system that involves rest, relaxation, and digestion, is active, okay? So what that means is if we sort of think about a relaxed conversation, I'm not stressed out, I'm not trying to win anything, it's not a competition, I'm not on trial. When I'm relaxed, words flow very, very, very freely, right? And that's why if we have people who have social anxiety and they have a little bit of liquid courage or they use a little bit of marijuana, people who are drunk and or high will talk a lot because their nervous system is in a relaxed state. So when someone comes into the picture, we were relaxed, but then something happens. There's a shift in our nervous system to where we are no longer in a relaxed state. And that is a switch from the parasympathetic nervous system to the sympathetic nervous system. Now, the sympathetic nervous system governs things like fight, flight, and freeze. And this is usually the response that we see in a lot of people who feel frozen in social interactions. So let's understand what's going on in the brain. The first thing that happens is when someone enters and is new to the conversation, we sort of don't know if we're safe around them. So this can be a combination of a couple of things. The first is I see this problem a lot in people who had difficult social interactions when they were growing up. So I got bullied a lot. If you've been bullied, maybe this happens to you. But basically, there's a dividing point at some point in your development, okay? There's like this like fork in the road in your development where some human beings are taught that the average person is like safe and friendly. And some human beings are taught that the average person could be a threat. And it's not that the majority of people that you encounter are a threat, but this is what's really scary about human psychology is, you know, even if there's like a 10% chance that this person is going to make fun of you or be mean to you, that is something that your brain is going to prioritize. So early on, what I see in my patients is that early on, a lot of them who struggle with this problem were basically taught in the first 15 years of their life that if a new person shows up, we have to treat them as a threat until proven otherwise. And that's why their nervous system acts in a particular way. This is an interaction that may not end well, so let's be on our guard. So first thing that happens is sympathetic nervous system turns on. We enter our fight, fright, flight, freeze response because of our past experience with people. When people hear about our coaching program, their first response is usually, why would I work with another human being when I can watch YouTube videos all on my own? Working with a coach is about amplifying your time and effort. We're great at wanting things and even making some progress, but we usually struggle with follow through or have some kind of setback. And that's exactly where working with a coach can help. Coaches provide personalized support to help you set appropriate goals, make progress, and even work through setbacks. Just let us know what your goals are, what kind of support you're looking for, and we'll match you with the best coach for your unique needs. Check out the link in the description below to see if coaching is right for you. Second thing that happens is, or maybe related to this actually happens first technically, is our amygdala, which is this little part of our brain kind of seated back here. It's a very primitive structure that involves our survival center of the brain, involves threat detection, fear, and anxiety generation. So this part of the brain turns on. So we have these benign perceptual stimuli, like a stranger shows up, right? So my eyes see that, my ears hear that. And then those signals from my eyes and ears, based on my past history with humans, travel and turn on the amygdala. And this is where things get interesting. So we feel afraid, we feel fearful, our heart rate starts to go up, we are no longer relaxed. And then comes the really interesting thing. you actually try to stop that. So then what happens is our frontal lobes activate. You realize, oh my God, it's happening to me again. I'm stressed out. This is just a regular conversation. Why can't I just be natural and effortless and smooth? Why can't I do that? So your frontal lobes, which are the parts of your brain that control all the other parts of the brain, kick in. And then you have an internal war. Okay, Hulk, relax. Be charming. Be charming. You're talking to yourself now. So you are now interoceptive and introspective. You are engaging with yourself. You have a natural impulse and you are fighting against that impulse. And that is the moment that you really struggle. And that's the moment that you really get screwed. Because if we look at healthy social interaction, it is about fluidity between me and the other person. Right. So if I'm having a conversation, my wife does this thing that I find incredibly annoying. I love her. She's amazing. But sometimes when I'm on a call with someone, I'll be talking to someone and I'll be blah, blah, blah. I'll say my thing. And then the moment I stop talking, right, the person on the other side of the phone stops talking, which is exactly when my wife starts telling me what to tell them. So the moment that I stop talking, I'm trying to have a fluid conversation on the phone and my wife is trying to have interject with me and, hey, make sure you tell them that and this and make sure you run. She's not saying that while I'm talking. She's saying that when I'm done talking, which is exactly when the other person starts talking, that it's impossible to hear what they're saying and I can't hear what she's saying. And I'm traumatized by it and I'm sharing that with y'all. No. The point is conversation is fluid, right? So conversation is about I'm going to send a signal. You're going to send me back a signal. And this empathic circuit of are you putting down what I'm picking up? Are you buying what I'm selling? Are we vibing? Is this empathic circuit intact? So this is about me and the other person, okay? And the problem is that once our frontal lobes activate, we lose that connection with the other person because now I am engaging with myself. Now I'm stuck in my own head and this is GG'd out. So there's a really fascinating medical example of when this frontal lobe circuit shuts off, right? So if I'm saying that, okay, when the frontal lobes turn on and they start engaging, wrestling with your amygdala, that's when you are no longer able to speak freely. So there's a really cool medical example of this because if someone has something called an anterior cerebellar artery stroke, the anterior cerebral artery is the arteries that supply the front of our brain. And when someone has a stroke to the front parts of their brain and their frontal lobes are no longer functioning properly, they do something called confabulate, which means that they are able to speak freely regardless of what the hell is going on. They're smooth motherfuckers. Okay, so we're gonna show you all a great example of this called string sign.
And they got a magic shop downtown.
Okay, here, take this one.
Oh, I really like that one. Go get it.
What do you like about that one?
So here's what we see in string sign. So this is a doctor who is pulling out nothing and they go like this and they're like, look, I have a string here from a magic shop. And then this person grabs the fake string and then you can start asking them questions about it. And they're like, hey, you know, what do you like about the string? And the guy's like, oh yeah, the string is really nice. And there's no real string. And the reason that someone is able to talk is because the frontal lobes are what impede us from talking freely. And so when we damage the frontal lobes, then we are able to freely talk irrespective of whether it makes any fucking sense. And in confabulation, basically what you get is patients that will make things up, but they will just continually talk, okay? So we don't want to damage our frontal lobes. We don't want an anterior cerebral artery stroke. But what we want to do is train ourselves to turn off that mechanism so that we can speak freely. So there are three things that we can really focus on. Remember, there's the autonomic nervous system, which is parasympathetic. Sympathetic nervous system, that's something we need to shut down. So how do we shut that down? This is where a deep exhalation is, or a slow exhalation is the fastest way, simplest way in a conversation that you can shut down your sympathetic nervous system. When our sympathetic nervous system is active, we hyperventilate. Deep, rapid inhalations, right? So instead, and then what you'll notice is there's a rapid exhalation. Right? That's when we're hyperventilating. I can feel a little bit woozy. You can do that with me for a second and you'll see how it feels. So the really interesting thing, if you just do that rapid hyperventilation like I just did, you'll start to notice a change in your brain. So So that's what's so cool about breathing and inhalation and exhalation. They are very, very rapid ways to alter our nervous system activity, okay? So what we want to do is slow exhalation. This is also you can do on the DL where you're not like interfering with the conversation. So deep breath in. You want to do that 3 times with slow exhalations. You can do it right now and you'll notice a physiologic calming. The second thing that we can do is alter our threat perception. So remember that the reason that the amygdala hyperactivates is because we've been trained to treat this person like a threat, okay? So there are 2 things that we can do here that are really interesting. So my favorite example of this, so I don't have cats. I'm allergic to cats. But recently, I've gone down the rabbit hole of, like, rehabbing cats. And I don't know if y'all have seen these videos, but basically people will, like, adopt cats. And then there's this whole complicated social process of introducing cats to each other so that they don't fight and they start to get along. And basically, if you take 2 strange cats and you stick them together, oftentimes what will happen is they'll be like, they'll be hissing at each other, swiping at each other. So what's going on with these cats? These cats are, their threat perception has been activated, right? Because they lived out in the wild where cats were dangerous. So now that they're meeting a new cat at home, all of their danger signals activate. And it's like really heartwarming and oddly addictive to watch the process of rehabilitating cats to where they're hissing at each other at the beginning. And then we start to like work with them and they're like cuddling at the end. And I think it's like crazy that we live in a world where we have sophisticated mechanisms for socializing cats. Meanwhile, the fucking human beings who are doing the socializing have this problem when socializing with other humans. Like, we have social rehab for cats, but we do not have social rehab for humans. Instead, we have this. The cool thing is that the same principles that work for cats, because cats have amygdala too, they have, I guess, frontal lobes, but their frontal lobes are not, we're talking about the amygdala right now. So we can actually use the same principles. And this is also what we call exposure therapy, but basically this is how this works. The way to extinguish your threat response with a stranger is to have a lot of benign interactions with strangers. So remember, the reason that your amygdala activates is because when you were growing up, strangers were dangerous, stranger danger. So basically what we want to do is have repeated multiple benign interactions with strangers that make us feel a little bit stressed. But the more of those we have, that response in the amygdala will naturally extinguish. And this is where things like, I think Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People is a book that, you know, people meme about a lot, but it's a really great book. And I think the hidden magic in How to Win Friends and Influence People is not any of the techniques. The hidden magic is something that Dale Carnegie weaves in and tricks you into doing, which is exposing yourself to repeated social interactions. That's the most important thing, right? So he says in chapter 4, I think, like, smile. So I think that's a great idea. So this is really simple. What we're going to start doing is having conversations with strangers. Now, we live in a world where you have to be really careful about this because people feel like threatened and things like that, especially if you're a dude. So the way that I would recommend y'all do this, this is how I did it, is I would pick people that are not in your mating realm remotely at all and start to have interactions with strangers. So in my case, I started chit-chatting a lot with old people, talking with people in the elevator. You know, if I see a dude walking by or I'm in an elevator with a dude and they have like a shirt that I like or something like that, arguably, I mean, this is hitting on them. I don't really think so. But, you know, I'll be like, hey, that's an awesome shirt. Like, you're really rocking that, bro. So starting to have small, and I know that's terrifying for y'all, right? So when a stranger is like, oh my God, like interacts with you, oh my God, it's so terrifying. But y'all should really do that, right? So start to interact with people, start to have small conversations with people. And the more that we do that, we will extinguish this amygdala response. The next thing that we can do is actually to engage curiosity. So this is where if we get stuck in our own heads and we are sort of assessing their threat. And this is sort of what it's like, right? So when someone comes in and you start to freeze up, you are like scanning them. You are like, your threat systems are activated, which means you're not like engaging with them. You are assessing them. You are sizing them up. Your brain and your body is paying attention to all their body language, what they're saying. And so you're kind of like zoomed into them, and there's no longer this like empathic back and forth, right? Either you're too stuck in your head or you are fully zoomed in on them, but there isn't an even flow between the two. And one really great way to manage that is actually curiosity. So if we sort of think about, you know, let's say I'm walking down a wilderness path and there's a really scary looking stick, and then immediately I feel threatened and I'm scared. And then once the threat goes away, then I'm like, oh, that's a cool looking stick. Like, oh my God, like, look at that stick. That stick is so cool. So curiosity is going to engage our parasympathetic nervous system. So try to get interested in the person. Like, you know, who is this person? Where do they come from? What brings them over here? And this is where we think about those questions as small talk. But if you internally reframe to, this is sort of the frame that I have when I meet people now, and this is something that's been cultivated. You know, I think like, here's a human being. This human being is like completely unique. They have a unique set of genetics, unique set of history and experiences. And like, I have an opportunity to spend some questionable amount of time with this person. And I will probably never see this person again. So I have 5 minutes to hang out with this unique human being. And then for the rest of my life, I'll never see them again. So let me try to make the most of it. Let's try to understand who this person is, what they're up to. If there's something I need from them, if I need a food recommendation, or I'm new to the city, or if they're reading books and I'm looking for a book, like, let's learn about this person, right? So you want to open up that sort of curiosity element. I also think when I'm working with my patients with social anxiety, we do zero in on this idea of like, why does it matter what this person thinks? Right? Because chances are you're never going to see them again. And so this is where like I've become a little bit more comfortable with people like disliking me and me potentially screwing up. And like, that's what you have to do to make YouTube videos on the internet. Right? It's okay for people to not like you. And just because this person doesn't like you, your mind may torture you when you go to bed at night. But at the end of the day, in the grand scheme of things, there's not really too much to that. And so the goal is just to be there with them. And this is the key thing to understand. When our frontal lobes are active, we're doing a lot of analysis and assessment, or we are struggling with ourselves. So in order to shut off those frontal lobes, we need to step away from those things, right? So if you're feeling anxious, take a deep breath, you know, slow exhalation. Okay, I'm anxious in this moment. That leaning into that feeling will shut off the frontal lobes in some way. Other parts of the frontal lobes will get activated, but those are the ones we want active. And then the last thing is, once we make this sort of cognitive reframe of, okay, like, this is just an opportunity to meet this person, and I've done a lot of practice towards this, right? So my extinguishing response from the amygdala is starting to kick in. This is just an opportunity to meet this person. That frame shift, that cognitive frame shift, is what will change the activity of your frontal lobes. Because now your frontal lobes are no longer assessing threat. They're just viewing this as an opportunity. And then you will be relaxed. The parasympathetic nervous system will activate and the conversation will start to flow.